And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson, joined today by Chris Houston, HeismanPundit.com and NBC Sports. Chris and I have done this several times on the podcast. Longtime listeners know that we enjoy breaking down the politics, the on-field performance, and all things that go into the Heisman Trophy. It's what makes Chris the Heisman pundit. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It's nice to be back and hear your voice.
What has been, in your mind, the way that the Heisman Trophy race has changed since Johnny Manziel won the trophy? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, looking back on it, and obviously did not speak to the media. We did not have all the controversy. He wins the trophy, and then all of Manziel mania takes off. Has the public's view of the award itself changed because of Manziel?
I don't think it's really changed. I think their view of him has probably changed.
Right.
I think that, remember, it's very important to differentiate between what the public thinks of somebody and what the Heisman Trophy voters think of somebody, because the only thing that really matters when it comes to the vote is what the voters think. And so I do believe that voters are generally judging him by his performance on the field. I do think there are a few voters who are sort of turned off a little bit by his, by the reporting of his on-field actions, and that as a result, this probably affects the race on the margins as to his ability to repeat. I do think that whether he had had those issues off the field or not, his ability to repeat would be severely hampered because I do believe there will never be another two-time Heisman winner, and so therefore his ability to overcome that, I think, even as good as he is, I think it would have been very difficult for him to do so. And so I think adding on top of that, the off-field antics that we've been talking about does not help him.
The Dennis Dodd, in his game column from College Station, along with many others, sort of pointed to Manziel's performance. He second in the SEC history for total offensive yards, only to himself from last year against Louisiana Tech. But this year he did it against Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, the Alabama Crimson Tide defense, the really where a lot of college football defenses sort of consider the measuring stick in how on being a great defense. Dodd believes that he relaunched this Heisman campaign. He even said in the column, you know, I've got it right here. He said, move over Archie Griffin. There's going to be another two-time winner. I'm with you, not necessarily for all the same reasons. I don't think Manziel will be the winner here, but I love your explanation. We've gone through this before. Why do you believe there won't be another two-time Heisman Trophy winner?
Well, we've seen this type of thing a lot, okay? We could go back. Let's say, Jason White. And I know that Jason White is no Johnny Manziel, but Jason White won the Heisman, and technically as a fifth-year senior, he was given a sixth-year, and he came back again in 2004. And for a long stretch of that season, people were talking about how he was having an even better season, and many people thought that he would actually repeat because he had some incredible games, and after he had those games, there would be talk that he was going to win again. But this failed to take into account were the other players in the race and the factors working against him as far as trying to repeat. Then we can move on to 2005. Matt Leinart returned, and after he threw the 4th-and-9 pass to Dwayne Jarrett and then snuck into the end zone to beat Notre Dame, many were saying the Heisman race is over. He's going to win the Heisman, conveniently forgetting that the actual Heisman frontrunner was on his same team, Reggie Bush, and who had had a great game at Notre Dame and probably the kind of game that probably put him over the top, I should say, or put him into the lead of the race at that point in the season. And, of course, he went on to win the Heisman. And then you go further onward to Tim Tebow in 2008. I believe he had a great stretch run there after the Mississippi loss, and people were talking about how he was going to win the Heisman again, and even talked about it again in 2009 when he returned. And after every big game, they would talk about how he was going to win the Heisman again. Well, he did not win the Heisman again. And so we're looking at, in the last two cases, two very, very high-profile players in college football history, Matt Leinart and Tim Tebow, neither of whom really came close to winning the Heisman again, even though Leinart finished third and Tebow finished third in the years after. Neither came, as a matter of the vote, close to winning the Heisman again. So I think that just as last year, many people still sort of guffaw over the notion that Geno Smith was the Heisman frontrunner because early on he had had a great season and people were talking about him being a lock at that point. And I wasn't one of those people, but some people were talking about it. The same way you can talk about Johnny Manziel at this point, having this huge game against Alabama. But remember, it was a loss.
Right.
And a guy like A.J. McCarron also had a huge game. And you have to look at the overall equation. You have to look at the race from a broader perspective rather than being at the game and looking at it in your face. You have to think about it. If you look at Marcus Mariota and you look at Johnny Manziel, and Marcus Mariota right now is currently on pace to have 4,900 yards and 47 touchdowns, which is is better than what Johnny Manziel did last year at the point in the Heisman race when the votes are due. Johnny Manziel, I think, is still on that same type of pace as well, but if you take an Oregon team that is undefeated with those numbers from Mariota and a Texas A&M team that has one loss with those numbers from Manziel, who's going to win? And I submit to you that the winner in that case would be Marcus Mariota. Because Johnny Manziel already won the Heisman, and there are some voters who are going to say, let's move on to the next guy. We're not going to ignore Johnny Manziel in total. He's going to, I think, go to New York, finish very high up in the race. But the question here is, who's going to actually win? I think Johnny Manziel can finish second. He might even finish a very high second or a close second. But there are some people out there who do not want to give Johnny Manziel a second Heisman, just like they did not want to give Tim Tebow a second Heisman, or Matt Leinart a second Heisman, or Jason White a second Heisman, or Ty Detmer a second Heisman,
right,
or anybody else except for that one anomaly of Archie Griffin. Billy Sims, another example, did not win a second Heisman, even though he had another great year, finished second the following year. So winning that second Heisman is just so hard. And until it happens, I'm going to say it's not going to happen.
Well, it's funny, you mentioned several of the M's, and you and I have both sort of had some fun with the fact that this really, I think, came up when everyone was talking about Jadeveon Clowney. He said, I don't know if Jadeveon Clowney could tackle the M's, and the M's would be Marcus Mariota, Aaron Murray, Braxton Miller, Johnny Manziel, A.J. McCarron. You mentioned a few of those, and we will run through some of the rest of them. But let's start at Braxton Miller, who has essentially missed two games now due to a sprained MCL in that San Diego State game. He sat out the rest of San Diego State. He sat out all of the game against Cal. And Kenny Guyton came in, ended up being one of the offensive players of the week. I mean, he had a tremendous performance. Do you think that Braxton Miller can bounce back and put together a Heisman campaign down the stretch? And if so, what is he going to need to do to jump the likes of a Marcus Mariota or an A.J. McCarron?
No, I think Braxton Miller's days as a Heisman candidate for 2013 are done. You cannot miss two games in a season. Beyond the games that you are beyond the time that a player would miss from not playing a full game because their team's blowing out. Everyone says, they missed X amount of games or X amount of quarters, and that's all true. But we're talking about full games that he missed in addition to those games, or in addition to those quarters he might miss during blowouts. So no Heisman Trophy winner in modern times has ever won the Heisman missing two games. There's been a couple guys who won the Heisman by missing a game, and that was
RG3, right?
Charles White in 1979, and also Charlie Ward in 1993. RG3, I believe, did not miss the game, actually. So it's very difficult to have the kind of numbers you need with that two-game handicap. So I think for Braxton Miller, I think we can safely say that his chances of putting up the kind of production he's going to need in order to build his case for the Heisman is problematic, and especially when you consider that his replacement came in and probably had as good a game as he might have had against Cal. It sort of, you know, portrays the picture of a program that is strong enough to survive without Braxton Miller guiding it through every game, whereas last year that did not seem to be the case because they seemed to be much less well-rounded, as it were, on offense.
Marcus Mariota and A.J. McCarron, in my mind, sort of the two most likely Heisman Trophy winners out of our group of M's. Marcus Mariota, I think, will meet some of your Heismanments having to do with gaudy statistics, as he certainly is on pace to do so, and I think will continue to produce. A.J. McCarron, you know, he sort of fits a lot of the intangibles, and it's going to be and if he's going to do it, it's going to be numbers like completion percentage and wins and record as a starter. And it feels like one is a stat-based candidate and one is almost a lifetime achievement candidate. Do you see it that way? And what is it? How do you view those two? Feel free to also even release some of your just posted Heisman watch at HeismanPundit.com.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on about those two guys. I think they're both symbols right now, beyond whatever they do on the field. Both of them are symbols to Heisman voters. Mariota symbolizes the new age style offense. And I know we have a guy like Johnny Manziel who's also in that type of offense, but Chip Kelly's offense, which is still at Oregon under Mark Helfrich, is probably the most celebrated offensive scheme in the country right now, and it's being celebrated even more because it's now in the NFL. Our elements of it are now in the NFL. So Marcus Mariota represents the complete sort of pinnacle of what a great talent can do in that system. And Oregon has never really had a great talent at quarterback running in that system. You had Darren Thomas a couple years ago, who really wasn't a great talent. And before that, you had Jeremiah Mazzoli, who was sort of a 5'10", outside linebacker playing quarterback. So you never really had the right guy plugged into that system. Mariota is a first round talent, and he's a guy who I think compares favorably to Colin Kaepernick in the NFL, or maybe Kaepernick compares favorably to him. But he represents sort of the pinnacle of what a player can do on offense. Meanwhile, McCarron represents sort of what Alabama has done in these last few years, obviously going for an unprecedented third straight national title. We won't know for sure whether he gets that national title at the time that the Heisman voters do, but I think people are starting to appreciate the fact that, hey, here's a guy who's not necessarily a game manager. That has been a rap on him, and I think for the most part it's been a fair rap, because Alabama does not really ask McCarron to win the game for him, for them. But they asked him to do that against Texas A&M, and he did it. He went out and had a career high in passing yards. He had 4 touchdown passes. He really was just as impressive passing the ball as Johnny Manziel was. Now, what really fascinates people about Manziel is the fact that he has that extra bit of magic where he can scramble around in the backfield like he did on that one play, but through an ill-advised pass which somehow got caught by his receiver, and he comes out of that smelling like a rose. McCarron obviously doesn't do those types of things. He's more steady, but people understand that steady has been winning the race of late, and Alabama has been that steady program, just grinding it out, winning those national titles. I think McCarron represents sort of he sort of manifests that mentality about Alabama. And I think people are recognizing that. And now that they see that he can shed that game manager label and win the game for them when Alabama needs it, I think they're realizing that if he were in a system that allowed him to win more games because of his arm, he would do just fine. And so that's why I think McCarron is in the race. I think I don't think that going head-to-head against Mariota, with all things being equal, that he would win it. But I do think that if some of these other candidates fall by the wayside or some of their teams lose games, And at the end of the day, if Alabama is undefeated and McCarron has very good numbers, I think that he has a chance to win.
If, let's say, Oregon loses to Stanford on that November 7th game, but Marcus Mariota is fantastic and, for the most part, mistake-free in that loss, it is more, let's just say, the credit to Kevin Hogan and Stanford in that particular game. Now, do you think that a one-loss Marcus Mariota would still, with the numbers that we are guessing he will finish the season with, you think Marcus Mariota is still on top of an undefeated A.J. McCarron preparing for a national title?
It's a very good question. It'll depend on what kind of numbers McCarron has. I don't think he can win the Heisman with sort of decent numbers. I don't think he can have 25 touchdown passes and 6 interceptions and throw for 2,800 yards. I don't think that's enough in this day and age. There really hasn't been a true under-center quarterback win the Heisman since Matt Leinart in 2004. The jump in production required by quarterbacks or for a quarterback to win the Heisman has been immense between 2004 and 2012. If you look at it, actually 2006 might be an exception as well. Troy Smith, although not an under-center quarterback, I think he only had 29 touchdown passes. Since then, we've crossed the Rubicon, and the average total production by those five Heisman-winning quarterbacks since then has been 47 touchdowns, 4,700 yards of total offense. So McCarron, I think, would have to become the first Crimson Tide quarterback to throw 30 touchdown passes. I think that would be a credit to his candidacy. And I think he's got to also surpass 3,000 yards passing. And I know he had 30 last year, including the bowl game, but what I mean is 30 in the regular season. And the 3,000 yards is also important because no Crimson Tide quarterback has ever thrown for 3,000 yards as well. So if he does those two things, which are things that no other quarterback at Alabama has ever done, and is among the leaders in passing efficiency, and his team is undefeated, I think that he could potentially trump what Mariota does with one loss.
You hear that, Bama fans? 3,000 regular season yards, 30 regular season touchdowns. That's coming from the pundit right there. All right, enough about the M's. We spend too many times because I get on there and, I get asked in radio hits. They say, who is in your Heisman conversation? And my mind races through the M's. And sometimes, not very many, but a few times, I have forgotten about the B's. And that's B as in buzz. And the B's are Taj Boyd at Clemson and Teddy Bridgewater at Louisville. Two quarterbacks that are, going to have very, very successful seasons, but in my mind, what they are facing in comparison to Marcus Mariota, Johnny Manziel, A.J. McCarron is the fact that Clemson, while the number three team in the country right now, is one loss away, regardless of Boyd's performance, from Heisman voters sort of dropping him from consideration. And even an undefeated Louisville might not be enough for Teddy Bridgewater, and sort of he doesn't put up a lot of gaudy statistics. I think that Teddy Bridgewater is more of a drool for NFL scouts because of his skill set, and it's going to be very tough for the Heisman voters to tune in to enough Louisville games when it looks like they're going to be favored in almost every game down the stretch by double digits.
Yeah, I agree. I think that those are very good points, Chip. And I think that the importance of Boyd and Bridgewater in their race, it's very interesting because people ask me, the A&M fans were very angry at me on Twitter right now that I did not have Johnny Manziel in my Heisman watch. And I think I would submit to them the names of Teddy Bridgewater and Taj Boyd as examples of why he's not in it. Because, look, beyond Mariota, beyond McCarron, this is a very strong field. Bridgewater is, no matter what he does, is going to be considered a great talent. He's going to have huge numbers regardless against that schedule. Some people know he's great, but they're not necessarily going to give him the Heisman because of the issue with the schedule and not being able to see him play against top teams. And no matter what, the Sugar Bowl will fade with memory as we go on into the fall. As for Boyd, this is a guy who actually had 46 total touchdowns last year when you count the bowl game. So we know that in that offense with Chad Morris, he has the potential to put up big numbers. Now, the issue is that guys like Boyd and guys like Bridgewater sort of give voters other options to vote for, which sort of, I think, it's more likely to come from Johnny Manziel's previous support than from, say, Marcus Mariota, who I think is going to be the kind of guy who is going to get new support, who's going to sort of be the guy who is kind of the, I don't want to say the anti-Manziel, but sort of the fresh alternative to Manziel. He
right.
was the guy last year who people talked about as being, you know, if not for Manziel, everyone would have been talking about him having the incredible freshman year type of thing. I think that when you combine the strength of Mariota's candidacy, and again, this is all presuming, you know, that Oregon's not going to lose two or three times, and that Clemson's not going to lose two or three times, and that, you know, Louisville's not going to lose, and that A&M finishes off their season with wins. So, again, this is all things being equal across the board. Having all those alternative candidates, having a Boyd, having a Bridgewater, in addition to McCarron, in addition to Mariota, and then if you look at all those factors kind of tugging at each other, and then it's just a matter of, you know, Mariota locking down the West Coast, showing up big in Virginia in front of East Coast voters, having enough of the strength to sort of stick out amongst all the candidates, and, you know, to win the Heisman. It might be a very close race. And I would submit to you that in a close race, a lot of those off-field issues with Manziel are going to hurt him, and not being able to speak to the media to sort of explain himself. And I do think there will be some reticence by some Heisman voters to reward a guy who appears to be non-repentant in his actions. So I do think that when you look at what Boyd can do, and Boyd, like you said, can win the Heisman if Clemson goes undefeated and he has the kind of numbers that a Chad Morris quarterback would typically have. And then Bridgewater, of course, has a very high hurdle to cross because of that schedule. But I think those two are very important factors in the overall scheme of the race and how it'll eventually play out.
Got three sleepers that I want to get your thoughts on. The first, redshirt freshman Jameis Winston, famous Jameis because of his really brilliant first performance on Monday night against Pittsburgh, 25 for 27, 93% completion percentage. Follows that up with a pretty good performance against Nevada, but for the most part, Nevada just did not hang in that game long. I think Winston spent more time on the sidelines as Jacob Coker, the backup, got in there and got some good work. But, you know, Jameis Winston, if he continues to be really, really efficient, if Florida State maybe knocks off Clemson and he has a good game in that very obviously highly televised game, I think he could creep up in there. Brett Hundley, sort of on that same Mariota path. Not Mariota path. Brett Hundley sort of on the Teddy Bridgewater path where he's getting so much attention from the NFL. And I'll pitch this to you. You know, college and NFL, I know you keep both of them sort of separated, but I think that as the NFL's popularity continues to grow and as the NFL becomes more of a 12 months a year, just like college, but, you know, the NFL is truly dominating things, I think you can see how, like, for example, on ESPN, Mel Kiper and Todd McShay give college previews because they want nothing but an NFL draft. Rob Rang at CBSSports.com, we feature a write-up from him every game day Saturday on who are the talents. I think that the NFL's growth has impacted the way that the media covers a lot of college football stars. Does that bleed over into the Heisman? And I say that because of someone like Brett Hundley, who, you know, UCLA might lose two games this year, and he might not, you know, he'll put up really good numbers. I don't know if he'll fit any of the other specific benchmarks that I know you've laid out before, but I think he's going to continue to get a lot of coverage and a lot of positive coverage, regardless of outcome, just because there's so much attention on him from the next level.
No, I agree. I think that's a factor, and I think that it's a big factor in sort of undergirding Bridgewater's candidacy. People know that he's not playing against tough competition, but they know he's a good talent, not only because of what he did against Florida, but because he's being widely talked about as the future first quarterback taken in the next draft. So people know he's talented. It is a factor, you know, in their decisions. They want to know a guy has talent. They don't want to vote for a guy necessarily who is an obvious product of a system. If someone is in a system and is also talented, so much better, and that's fine. But if you're in a system and you are clearly aren't a guy who people are talking about as being talented, I think this is a detriment. And this is why quarterbacks from places like Texas Tech or Hawaii have had issues in the past as far as actually getting any traction in the Heisman race. So I do agree that this sort of never-ending obsession with the draft is sort of a works as a benefit for the Heisman candidates. But I do think also that people have to recognize, and I think a lot of people do recognize, that these are two very different games. And actually, it is college football which is influencing the NFL far more than the other way around, because we are seeing, because of the change in college football offenses in the last 7 years, in which I'd say 90% of college football teams run some version of the spread, the NFL is finally kind of relenting and realizing that the quarterbacks we are going to be drafting, we have two choices. We can either try to conform them into our style of football. In other words, do what they did to Alex Smith and do what they have been trying to do to Tim Tebow. Or we can just realize that, hey, these guys run these systems and they're best fit for these systems, so we're going to run some type of system, or at least some type of conform our offense to around them to enable them to take advantage of their talent. So I think it's going in those two directions. But I do think the college football has been influencing the NFL more. I actually think this is actually contributing to the popularity of the NFL, as well. But I do think that, of course, if you look at fantasy football, there's obviously a good chunk of people who follow the NFL purely on just self-interest and because of their fantasy leagues as well.
So real quickly on Jameis Winston, Brett Hundley, Bryce Petty, any one of them you see creeping up into the race? That's my fault. I completely went off onto a rant that I had been sort of thinking of over the weekend. But
No problem.
Yeah, what do you think about those three?
So Winston, I have my guard up about him, if only because I do know this about Jimbo Fisher's offenses at Florida. He has run 13 offenses since 2000, whether at LSU or at Florida State. And the average number of touchdowns produced by a Jimbo Fisher quarterback during that stretch has been 19. No quarterback has ever topped 28 touchdown passes in a Jimbo Fisher offense. This is sort of the drawback of that style of offense, this under-center pro-style offense in this modern age of the Heisman, and that it does not produce big numbers. Now, you can either complete a pass or not complete a pass, and Jameis Winston has completed 40 of his first 45, and that's obviously a very impressive number. My question is, will he have enough production to have the total touchdowns and total yards that are typically needed in a modern age Heisman race? And on this question, I'm very skeptical, if only because, as we've seen before, once teams get into their conference play, and I know that FSU played Pitt, but Pitt is not familiar with FSU's style and personnel, but once FSU gets into the heart of ACC play, where these coaches know what FSU does, the players are familiar with each other, they know their tendencies. Are the FSU wide receivers going to be as wide open as they have been the last couple games, which has enabled Winston to just sort of hit targets and do so in a highly efficient manner? I'm very skeptical whether he can keep up that same pace. And the irony is that when you start out really well, when you revert back to the norm, the drop seems far more precipitous than it would be if you had just stayed at that rate the whole time. So at some point, he is most likely going to drop from an 89% passer, maybe to a 72% passer, but it's going to seem like a big drop, and he will sort of revert back to what is considered a normal mean. If he proves me wrong, then I think he's got a great chance to, I don't think win the Heisman, but be in the thick of it and sort of maybe maybe get to New York. As for Brett Hundley, I think his program, or his candidacy, and let's throw Bryce Petty in with this as well, his candidacy will not be viewed in the same type of prism that another candidacy might be viewed. In other words, if UCLA does not have to go undefeated necessarily for him to win the Heisman. And I would say the same thing with Baylor. And this is because if the narrative is that he brought UCLA back to prominence, and that means if he goes 11-2, then UCLA is in the top 10 or the top 5 and plays at a really high level. And he is seen as the guy who single-handedly brought this program, you know, into the national conversation. Then we're looking at a RG3 type of situation, which is what he did at Baylor.
Or Manziel.
Or Manziel.
Yeah.
Very much so. Yeah. So Manziel, they lost 2 games last year. So this is the context by which Hundley would contend for the Heisman, which is making UCLA football relevant. And for Petty, I think RG3 has already made Baylor relevant. I think Petty will probably need to lead Baylor to the Big 12 title, I think, to really have a shot to make some noise in the race, you know, in conjunction with obviously having huge numbers, which I think he will have those numbers in that offense. So their standards of competing for the Heisman are a little bit different than some of these other guys, because some of these other guys are already on teams that are considered well-established. And so, therefore, the expectation is greater for those teams and for their effect on those teams. It's unmistakable if you look at UCLA. If they were to win 11 games, the progression of UCLA's improvement would be clearly linked to Hundley's play, going from sort of an average team last year but improving to an elite team would be seen as something that was almost solely because of what Hundley has done.
He is Chris Houston. You can follow him on Twitter at Heisman Pundit. He is NBC Sports. He is HeismanPundit.com. He has just posted, if you are listening to this, it's up. He has just posted the Heisman Watch, which is a lot of his opinions, which you've just heard, that will be there. He also conducts the Heisman Straw Poll on a weekly basis, which is sort of his straw poll of actual Heisman voters. We will do this again, Chris, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
For Chris Houston, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.